Today's episode is brought to you by The Chocolate Mousse. The Chocolate Mousse is a specialty candy store based in Pittsburgh, but they also have an amazing online store. They offer a number of different delicious sweet confections, everything from artisan chocolates, specialty curated gift baskets, gummies, jelly beans, imported candies from all over the world, and anything you can imagine, they can ship to you if you want to treat yourself. They can ship to your loved ones if you want to send a fun gift. And they are available on Instagram. You can find them at The Chocolate Mousse, PGH, that's MOOSE. Or you can go to their website at chocolate-mousse-2.myshopify.com.
You are wheeling down the same road I thought you had left by now, given the damage they've caused.
Introduction. I put a spell on you. And now you're mine. You can't stop the things I do.
Hello, BB Hive. It is your old pal and star mom, the Zine Witch Bee. I'm here for another episode of the Burn Black Audio Zine, where we're going to talk wellness, mental health, astrology, human design, and much more. I hope you guys are doing well this week. I had a pretty good week, actually, especially compared to last week. Last week, I was kind of annoyed. And going through a bit of a breakup with a narcissist. And this week I actually read something online that I wanted to share with you. And it says, this was actually on Twitter, by the way. It was by Carmen Maria Mercado. And it says, "Hi, today please meditate on how easily we accept women's pain as collateral damage in men's self-discovery." And I just dropped to the floor and I was like, oh my goodness, this is exactly what I have been feeling for years, and it's frustrating. And let's have a little discussion about this, shall we? So I feel like, okay, I was talking to a client about that this week, and we both said that we both feel like we've called ourselves the catalyst. And I don't know if this is because I'm a Plutonic person, an intense person, or a heavily Neptunian person, but I seem to work as a trigger. And there seems to be an ongoing pattern with everyone I have ever dated where I work as a trigger. I am the catalyst. I am the catalyst for their growth and spiritual change. But I never end up with the person. It's always the person after me, like I'm some good luck Chuck. And it's fucking annoying. I am sick of educating men on how to do the work. And so now I'm adding to the list of my needs. I was going to say my desires, but my needs. Has his own therapist and is currently doing the work. That needs to be number one. I am no longer doing that. I am no longer educating these gentlemen that I date. I just can't. And it made me want to sort of have a new segment this week about terrible dates, because we all need to laugh a little bit. We're in a lockdown. That's the political climate is really scary right now. So let's add a little humor and sprinkle that on top of our astrology. And so we have a new segment this week I'm tentatively calling Bad Romance, where listeners, please send us your 3-minute stories about, I want to hear about your worst dating experience, your worst breakup in 3 minutes, and then tell me their zodiac sign. And we will play it on each episode. How about that? So we have a really good episode this week. We have Natalie Slater, who's kind of a big deal if you're from Chicago. Natalie is an actual innovator as far as cooking blogs go. Her blog has been on the internet longer than pretty much any cooking blog that I personally know of. It's a vegan cooking blog, and it was called Bacon Destroy. It is called Bacon Destroy. And Natalie Slater is also the marketing manager for Upton's. And if you live in the Chicagoland area, you are probably familiar, whether you're vegan or non-vegan, with Upton's, because they are fucking fantastic. So please go check them out as well. And when COVID is over, please go to Upton's Break Room. They have the best ice cream. They have the best treats. They're just the best. And so is Natalie. And so today we're going to talk a little bit about Natalie's humble beginnings being an innovator and bloggess. And then we're going to talk a little bit more about vegan cooking, some of her favorite snacks, and so much more. And so we have a full show for you this week, so stick around.
And now for the astro weather forecast.
So we have a really interesting sky this week. You know, the sun has already moved into Leo. It's Leo season. Hey guys, did you know it's Leo season? So Leo is really about being creative. It's about children. It's about play. So it's encouraging you to have a bit of a playful spirit, to indulge creativity this month, to be a little showy, to be a little lion, king of the jungle. Now's the time to get creative. Leo season also, to me always, is a great time to start doing inner child work. So this is a great time to really focus on what's coming up for us right now with our insecurities. It's also Chiron retrograde. What are we doing? What patterns are we repeating that we have outgrown? Where is it coming from? So these are really good questions to ask yourself during Leo season, and be creative about it. Maybe this is a great time to start a zine, a self-reflected zine. There's not enough per zines out there. We're also headed into the Mars retrograde pre-shadow. Okay, so Mars is actually going to be in a square to Mercury. And so that will be happening Monday. As I'm recording this, I should mention it is Sunday. So tomorrow, if you're listening to this fresh off the block. So this is really going to activate our awareness and our hyperactivity. So this is really making us question. I mean, Mars is in Aries, and that's like the god of war, and it's also our impulses. And so it's going to really challenge us to really understand where our impulses come from, why like we do the things that we do impulsively without thinking, and how our actions actually affect people going forward. So like, this is a really good time to start thinking about the ripple effect that you have in your life. Do the things that you say align with the person that you put yourself out to be? Where do your values actually stand? Do you treat people as you think you do? Are you aware of the impact that you have on other people? Are your patterns conscious? These are all really good things to be evaluating this week. There might be a little bit of jealousy going on. You might be feeling a little bit competitive with other people. There might be some shadow issues from past relationship traumas. This is a really good time to dive deep into that. Kind of doing the shadow work required to figuring out, why are you jealous? Why are those feelings coming up for you? I recommend reading the Jealousy Workbook. It is fantastic. And if you live in Chicago, they actually have it in their library at the Leather Archives. On August 4th, Venus is going to be in conjunct Saturn, so we might feel a little bit stifled on how we express ourselves. This is a good time for social distancing, and this is a good time to just stay at home and, you know, take it easy. And that's your weekly Astrocast. Visit me at The Zine Witch on Instagram for more information on this week's astro weather. Burn black.
Mailbag!
Our first question came from Eliza. And for this one, I had to call in the experts.
Hello. I have a big question about astrology, and it's something that I've been pondering for a while. I think you might be just the right person to give me some input on it, and I'd just really like to know if you've thought about this and what you do think, if you have. I envision the universe being like a complicated clock with a series of different settings, and the stars are kind of working in various rings around this complex clock, almost like gears. And I wonder if this clock is something we're able pre-birth to jump into. Do we jump into a birthplace and a time for a reason? Do we come here with a purpose or a selection, and we kind of use that clock of astrology as part of a choice? I know it's kind of a different question, but I am really curious. What is your...
So this was such an interesting question. I really wanted to call in the experts. Sometimes I have these ideas. Like when I was thinking about this, which I think about pretty often, I figure there's some sort of math, some sort of equation that we don't really understand yet in this dimension. Because I think consciousness is not even something we can conceptualize with the limited skill set that we have in this dimension. And I can't figure out how to particularly word it,
But I have these distorted images in my mind, and I could talk about it forever. I have an open throat chakra. But I felt it was necessary to call in my colleagues for this one to really determine exactly what I was trying to say. So for this one, I went to one of my favorite astrologers, Christina Ferrillo. Christina runs 8th House Astrology, and she just has a beautiful way with words. So I sat and I explained to her all of these ideas, this math that I thought existed, and this is what she responded. I think astrology is proof that the patterning, math, semiotics that you're reaching for. It's striking what comes through a chart, an inert map that is reflected in life. Totally shocking or just completely amazing. I think it speaks to our innate harmony with nature. As the gravitational pull of the planets impacts life on Earth, seasons, cycles, rhythms, we are all just very divorced from that in the modern age, where most of us don't even get to put our feet in the grass for years on end due to living in cities, alienation, and capitalism. I wonder if people who lived more directly in or with nature were able to trust the intricacies of cycles and just to know that we're a part of it based on what they saw, which we have now forgotten. And I thought that that was so perfectly put and genius, so I wanted to include that in your answer. Essentially, it is my belief that I think that we choose to be here for a particular reason. I think now is an interesting time to examine. It sort of feels like the end of days, a revolution. And so for that reason, I could choose to be scared. I could look at my own traumas and choose to ask why these things happened and get angry with the situations that I've been dealt. Or I can choose to believe that I have a higher purpose and I can have a conversation with my higher self and ask my higher self what I'm here to learn. Why did I ask to be here? I truly believe that I personally did ask to be here as a beacon of light. I feel like source, whatever source is, whether it's light, God, however you look at it, the earth, has a higher purpose for all of us. How do we help heal people unless we actually understand pain? How do we help other people unless we've been in certain circumstances so we can fully conceptualize it? I think some of us have different roles. I think some people are left angle profiles, which we say in human design, meaning we're transpersonal. We're here to help people who have personal destinies reach what it is that they want to learn about themselves. While some of us are really here to just heal the world. Those are left angle profiles. Right angle profiles have a destiny that they ask to be here to fulfill. Left angle people help fulfill that by helping others and bringing upon karma. I think we're all in this weird cycle together, and we have many different roles to play and many different paths to get there. But I also think in some ways that we are all one. We think that we are so separate from one another, but really we're just pieces of the clock, like you said. The difference is that we're not necessarily the hands of the clock. We are all the different pieces of the clock working together. And I just have to chalk it up to when I leave this dimension, I'll begin to understand it a little bit better. Until then, I have to trust my guides and understand that even when things are fucked up as they seem like they are right now, there is a higher purpose for me to be here. And so I'm going to take every opportunity to grow and learn from every circumstance, whether it's bad or good.
My name is Jeanette, also known as Saturn Sandwich on Instagram and YouTube, where I'm trying to branch out a little bit more. I'm an astrologer from Alaska, which is where I am right now due to coronavirus. But I got to do a bunch of traveling last year around the United States and a little bit of the world before coronavirus decided to scrap those plans for me. But yeah, that's where I'm at. I've been studying for about 4 to 5 years and have a particular interest in evolutionary astrology and the study of past lives and reincarnation. And more I'm interested in astrology as it pertains to history and those really big cycles of the outer planets. So that's me. I really love this question. The idea that the celestial bodies act as this kind of giant clock of sorts, and that we potentially have the choice to hop into this existence at a particular time and place as a choice. And then what is the purpose of that choice? So this lines up really pretty concisely just with my own little personal view of time and the universe and all that. And I was just talking about this with a client the other day during a chart reading, this whole concept, because I'm definitely of the school of thought that we have that, before we are incarnated into these bodies, that our souls have a choice on what lessons we need to experience growth and what lessons we are kind of sent here to learn. So that, you know, are we born to our parents for a particular reason? Are we born into our situation for a particular reason? Like, do we experience all our struggles and heartache and triumphs for a particular reason? A lot of people would say, like, nope, not at all, sorry. But I'm of the school of thought that all of that is exactly for a particular reason. I don't know if we can even really, like, comprehend it with our little human brains down here on Earth right now. Maybe after we die we do, and reconnect with Source. Who knows? Certainly not I. But that, yeah, I think that the birth chart is a perfect reflection of the, there's something bigger at hand. Like, there's some larger force of consciousness that aims to experience all that there is to experience. And the fact that each birth chart is so unique and outlines all of these very nuanced archetypes and energies and lessons that we learn during our existence on Earth. Like, I definitely think that could be deliberate. Like, that we choose to go through what we do for a reason. Now, I've heard, like, you know, concepts of Source or God or whatever you want to call it, that it could be this energy, whether that's like a big blob of light or a fucking computer simulation, but that Source is trying to experience itself. Now I feel like I'm throwing out this, like, these big ideas, but I like to think of all of our, like, as humans with birth charts experiencing totally individual timelines here on Earth at whatever time that we are on Earth, that's an interesting thing that I like to think about when it comes to that too, is like this idea of, like, consciousness experiencing itself through all of these infinite experiences that we have here. So I don't know if that answers your question, but it certainly lines up with a lot of the ways that I view astrology and time and stars and shit. And I want to say this too, is that I love thinking about time, time in the celestial bodies, as definitely one and the same thing. So like literally we would, humans have been our ways of tracking time are like, is by the stars, by like, we track night and day with the sun and the moon, and we track year to year, and like our whole calendar and how we keep track of time, like, is really just through the motion of the other bodies in our solar system, like in the universe. So I think that's a great way of putting it. The stars is a big old clock. Yes.
I have a question. So what are the aspects, what are the best aspects for romantic and sexual compatibility in two people's charts when it comes to Venus and Mars? And are Venus and Mars really like the best indicators of romantic and sexual compatibility?
So I think while Venus and Mars are great physical and fun attractors, I think the Moon and Mercury are also a lot more important when it comes to having healthy relationships. But to answer your question, I think Jupiter aspects to Venus are usually great, especially in composite, because they'll be very generous with one another and they'll have similar taste. Venus and Mars conjunctions will ignite really quickly. It'll be very passionate, very physical. And Moon conjunct Mars, wow, that's a huge one, especially if it's a double whammy, meaning that both partners have this, because it will be a really primal physical attraction that lends itself to the one partner wanting to get the other partner pregnant and keep them pregnant. Sun conjunct Moon is really good because it shows that both the divine masculine and the divine feminine are in alignment with one another, and the emotional needs of one partner is able to be provided for. Mars and Jupiter, the trine or sextile, gives productive enthusiasm. They can inspire each other. They will push each other to be more adventurous and get out of their comfort zone. But of course, there's the composite love stellium, and that's when Mercury, Venus, and the Sun are all together in a composite chart. This is a huge indicator of a beautiful friendship above everything. And that's what I think you really need in a relationship. You need to be able to be friends with your partner first and foremost, because that's what's actually sustainable.
We want to look at lots of things when it comes to romantic and sexual compatibility, and just looking at relationships in general. Like, their relationships are complicated. They just are. And it's really important to look at Venus and Mars when it comes to like romance and sex, but we also want to look at the chart as a whole, and especially the composite chart, because that is the chart of the relationship itself. I'd say for Venus, like, of course, the trine, the sextile work great. That flows together, whereas the square can be trickier. You know, that shows that our relationship needs are at odds to each other, so it can take some work. And you know, sometimes, like, I wouldn't label the square as, like, a curse by any means. In relationships, it can add, like, challenges, which it can be a bitch for sure sometimes, but the square can kind of bring out challenges that can be really dynamic and like give us a lot of growth with our partners too, but it's growth because it's not easy. We'll say that. And then I'd also say, like, look at any, it, what else, if Venus, maybe she's not like aspecting another person's Venus perfectly, you know, but, or maybe they're not even on the same page, but maybe Venus is giving awesome aspects to your Moon or Mercury or Sun. Like, that can all contribute to the, like, to the strength of a relationship. And listen to me, I'm like, oh, I don't know if this is technically like romance, but I'm a heavy seventh house person, so I'm like thinking of the relationship. So as far as romance goes, like, check out what's happening in the fifth house. That can be really helpful. The fifth house is, of course, the place of fun and romance and all that good shit. I'd also say too, like, see what Mercury is doing. Like, when your Mercury can get along with someone, that is an awesome aspect to have just for the relationship overall, because our communication is everything. Like, communication is going to help you with love, sex, romance, the whole shebang. So see what that Mercury is doing. And let's see, for sex, you, the, like B, was saying, the, it can be fun to have some tension between Mars. Like, the square isn't bad, the opposition isn't bad. And this I'm talking for, like, just sex, right? And because Mars, like, a little bit of tension or a lot of tension can be pretty fun when it comes to our Mars stuff. Because Mars, unless you've got it in Libra, like me, isn't here to, like, harmonize necessarily. It's here to, like, be aggressive and primal and all that good stuff. But yeah, I'd also look at what Lilith is doing. I'd see what Eros is doing. Like, Lilith aspects can be pretty fun. Like, Lilith to the moon can be hot. And then, of course, you want to see, like, what Mars is doing in the composite chart. Like, how is Mars doing? is it making aspects to any, to Lilith, to Eros, to, like, Pluto even? That can be really intense. You also just want to see, like, in synastry in the composite chart, like, what's going on in the fifth house, what's going on in the eighth house. Like, whereas the fifth house kind of has a pretty, like, light, fun, flirty energy, the eighth house is, like, this place of deep intimacy, and, like, magneticism. It's definitely not for the weak. It can kind of even lend itself to, like, obsession or some darker tendencies, but it is, at the end of the day, a place of, like, soul meets soul. So, yeah, it's not necessarily everyone's cup of tea, and, you know, word of caution, it can be intense in that eighth house, but that is the eighth house for you. Yeah, that's what I got.
And now for my Simply Divine Talk with Natalie Slater.
So I'm curious. Okay, so I first heard about Bake and Destroy many, many moons ago. But I feel like your name has been thrown around the hardcore community forever. I'm curious, okay, so how did you go from hardcore Bosch princess to being a chef? I want to hear the trajectory.
They are directly related, and I appreciate actually speaking with someone who maybe I don't have to explain so deeply how they're related, because a lot of times people, you know, will say, what does hardcore punk and vegan food have in common? And I'm like, yeah, literally everything.
Everything?
But yeah, I mean, you know, I became vegan in the late 90s because I was into hardcore, and I was, you know, going to shows that were taking place at Krishna temples and things like that, and learning a lot about animal welfare and quite frankly, trying new foods for the first time in my life, because, you know, I grew up in the Midwest, and I was eating a lot of potatoes and corn and beef my whole life. And so not only, like, coming to terms with, like, where my food was coming from and the suffering related to that, but also, like, learning about seasonings was, like, amazing. So going to those shows and having, like, an Indian food buffet and just having my mind blown by what food could taste like, you know, I was hooked. So I had to learn how to cook, because, you know, my parents, when I told them what I wanted to do with my diet, were fine with it, but they were like, we don't know what that is, and we don't know how to feed you, so you're gonna have to figure it out. So you know, I started learning to cook, like, pretty I wouldn't say young, really, because I feel like it's a skill that people should have by the time they're in their late teens, but a lot of people don't. So I started, you know, figuring out how to cook, and luckily the internet was in its early stages by then, and I was able to find message boards, and people had like brownie recipes and lasagna recipes and things posted. So I wasn't totally thrown in the deep end, but kind of, I mean, from that to like starting a blog and sharing recipes with the rest of the world, it was really just a matter of having the time on my hands to do it. Because when I was younger, I was, you know, I was running around, I was working, I was going to school, you know, like there just wasn't time to do anything else. And then, you know, once I was settled down a bit, had graduated and got married and I had a baby at home, like I had more time, at least like, you know, between nap time, early bedtime, and just the fact that when you're a new parent, you kind of lose your friend. Like, at least that happened to me. I was suddenly very alone. So, so I just, you know, I started getting back to cooking a lot and baking a lot, and just kind of posting my recipes on a website that was mostly a way for me to keep in touch with my family. Like, it was really more of a personal, I didn't really consider it a blog. I almost considered it more like a journal, like a live journal or something. You know, so a lot of the posts would just be like what my baby was doing that day, or how I was feeling that day and how I was dealing with being a mom. And then maybe once in a while it was like, oh, I made these pretzels or I made these cookies or whatever. And I would post the recipe. And after probably a few months of doing that, I started hearing from other people that I hadn't really considered might be reading it, like other new moms, other young, you know, other vegan moms, other like heavily tattooed people who also love to bake and like things like that. And I realized like, oh, this is actually not my diary. Like there are people reading this. So that's how it started.
That's amazing. Obviously there is like a hardcore influence to it as well. Where do you see the correlation beyond just like Cro-Mags and bands like that supported those lifestyles? Like, where do you find it, the correlation in your own brand? Do you feel like you have like a radical approach to cooking, or do you take like an unusual approach to
I think probably in things that you like, you know, in the early years of my website. So I started it in 2006, so it's kind of a dinosaur in the grand scheme of food blogs. But probably early on it was, you know, I was definitely like more into kind of a more aggressive style of hardcore. I was more into like New York hardcore and like kind of more into like, you know, I hate this word, but more like thuggish type hardcore was what I was listening to. And so like my style of writing was more kind of like aggressive, and you know, I was definitely like pulling influence from things like Cro-Mags and, you know, Agnostic Front and bands like that were a bit more aggressive. The older I get, the more I veer toward sort of the, you know, more like Krishna core and more spiritual forms of hardcore, and they're just sort of like kinder, gentler hardcore. And that's how my approach has changed also. So I definitely had some time where I was very aggressive with my like approach to veganism and to kind of like my writing style. And sometimes I look back at those old posts and I'm just really embarrassed. It just seems really put on. Whereas now I, you know, I relate a lot more to, you know, bands like Shelter and 108 and like sort of talking, like thinking more about like, you know, how just like humans are all related and how we can all sort of just be kinder to each other and to the planet and to animals. And I think my approach in writing has changed to reflect that. Like my writing style, I think, is a lot more approachable, but also just my personality on social media. I think that people who just started following me in the last few years would be surprised to hear about like how many conflicts I had. Like I used to have a lot of fights in the comment section and stuff. Whoa. And now it's just,
and people like, have to say, I'm curious, like what were the dumb comments like?
Yeah, well, I mean, there were definitely a lot more men that were, you know, felt real free to tell me like what I could and couldn't do, or like, or, you know, come at me about like whether or not I really liked a band that I was talking about. Or,
that's the worst.
Whereas like,
name five songs.
Exactly. And those guys are still out there, but I think they're more scared now to show their faces than they were. So there were definitely times, especially, you know, there was sort of a period around 2008, 2009, where I was getting a lot of press for my blog. And I, you know, I was ending up in little write-ups and like Time Out Chicago and Thrillist and places like that. And then that's when all these guys would come out of the woodwork. You know, like, oh God, another girl who likes hardcore. Like, whoa, let me guess, H2O, or just like, you know, those guys. And they're still out there, but they're definitely, either they know better now, or like I have aged out of like their comfort zone, and they're less likely to come for like a 40-year-old woman than they are to go harass like a younger woman who's into the same stuff as them. But so there was like a lot of that.
Walking encyclopedia with those people. Like I kind of was my typical Virgo rising self, where it's like, all right, now you name five songs that have this specific bass player playing on them.
Right.
I had to outgrow that.
Yeah, it's funny. My husband and I were watching that that Michael Jordan docuseries that everybody was into a couple weeks ago. Yeah. And I was telling him about like my family was a big basketball family, and it was something that we all like watched together. And I remember going to school in a Bulls t-shirt and getting confronted by a group of boys demanding that I name every player on my shirt, which I did because I watched basketball and my family was really into it. But like, that was sort of my first taste of like that weird aggression that men have about women and what they consider their space. And it's really never, didn't go away until, and again, I can't figure out if it's because they have figured out that they can no longer act that way in public, or if it's because I'm at a point in my life where they don't mess with me anymore because I'm older, or I've been around long enough, or
there is like a thing. Like my ex and I talk about this a lot because he was in a Chicago hardcore band too, and it's particularly in the big cities. Like you see it a lot in Chicago, you see it a lot in Philadelphia. But like, I actually wanted to write an article for Maximum Rock and Roll about this, but they were never that interested. But I wanted to talk about women over the age of 40 who are still involved in hardcore and punk, because I feel like we had to go through so much of that growing up. Like, there's so many women that just ended up dropping out entirely. Yeah. And so like, but there is like a thing that happens where it's like, once you reach a certain age, there is like old dude power in a sense where stop fucking with you. And like, I would never be somebody fucking with someone like Miriam, for instance, you know, who is a prominent person that lived in Chicago that is about our age and is older. Like, no one would fuck with her because she's paid her dues.
Yeah.
But men don't have to go through paying any dues, which is so crazy.
Yeah.
And on top of that, I think the interesting dichotomy to me about punk in general, and this transcends gender entirely, is something I love about punk is, and I love this about the zine world as well, where it's like, I love the feeling of seeing someone's first band or seeing their first scene. And it can be totally shitty and stapled together and the worst handwriting and have really not a ton to say, but I feel like I'm seeing people at their most vital. I'm seeing people kind of learn how to become themselves. Like, learning how to play a bass for the first time is like super exciting to me. And so it's much more exciting to me to watch like a band's first show than watching their last show, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
so
that does make sense.
And I think that's punk to me. Like, punk to me is getting up and doing something that intimidates you, but doing it anyway, because it's self-expression.
I think that's a perfect description, really.
Yeah. I wish, like, if anyone's listening out there and they're suffering with toxic masculinity, please pay attention to this conversation. Okay, so my next question I suppose I want to ask is, so where is Bacon Destroy now? Like, what is the main focus? You do a lot of reviewing, but you're also obviously still baking. There's a cookbook. What is kind of the focus currently?
Yeah, it's definitely transitioned a lot. I think after my cookbook came out, I kind of felt a lot of pressure to do a second one right away. Like, my publisher was like, the second book's the one that sells the first one. Like, I, before I even had my copy turned in, they were already like, okay, what's book number two? And I think it was just at that point I was confused about what I should do next, because all signs were pointing to, well, that content is valuable, so save it and put it in book number two. So I kind of stopped writing recipes at that point and, you know, stopped publishing them, because, like, what if I need them for book number two? And while I was in that weird stage of figuring out what was next for myself, I felt a little bit like the world kind of passed me by, because all of a sudden there were, you know, all of these like bestseller cookbooks that were like flying out of everywhere, and there were all these unique voices, and whether you like them or not, you know, like, I was just listening to the Bearded Vegans podcast. They did an episode about Thug Kitchen and how they finally changed their name after years and years of people telling them that they suck. And, you know, that book came out like shortly after mine. And so it was like, you know, I just, in the stage where I was thinking about book number two and kind of not even really wanting to do it because it wasn't that fun to write book number one, I was like, well, now there's just all this stuff, and like, what do I have to say that's unique in this space? And instead, what I found was that, you know, people were less interested in my recipes, in my original recipes, and more interested in what products I suggested or that I liked or that I bought myself. And I still don't really like get tons of free stuff sent to me from brands. Like, I'm not really like an influencer on that level, but people seem to come to me for things like that. Like, my DMs every day are people like, you know, like, do you have a whatever, like a hand lotion that you like? Do you have a lip balm that you like? How do you clean your bathroom? Like, I get all these questions because people know that, like, I'm checking to see if something's vegan. I'm checking to see if, you know, if it's eco-friendly. If it doesn't work, I'm not going to back it. Like, I'm checking all that stuff and being honest about it. And so what I realized in that weird limbo stage was that maybe I'm not the, you know, the vegan chef, and maybe I'm not the recipe source for everybody. But what I seem to be is like this kind of resource for information about what products are good, what snacks are good, which brands are cool, like that kind of stuff. So I just kind of switched gears and like focused more on social media, just trying to share that information. And in the meantime, you know, I've also been working in the food business for many years, and so kind of sharing insights with people about how that business works. I'm always surprised when I talk about kind of the, you know, like how food gets from the manufacturer to the retailer. And I think people are going to think that's really boring, but then it's like they're fascinated by all of the weird things that go on behind the scenes. So I guess I realized that like maybe Bake and Destroy doesn't have to be like the go-to recipe blog for vegans. I could be more of like kind of sometimes I think of myself as a big sister, although age-wise, maybe I'm more of a mom to a lot of new vegans. And like, I can kind of tell you, like, you know, like, don't bother with that. It's not going to work. Or like, definitely try this. Like, I feel like I spend 40% of my time just gently guiding people through the world of vegan cheeses.
Oh, wow. Okay. I want to talk about that because, this is a conversation, my friend Lauren, who has done this podcast many times, we talk about vegan cheeses quite often. So this is a hard, this is a hard area to navigate when someone is moving into veganism.
Yeah.
What are some of the cheeses you recommend?
Well, see, this is where I start, because that question, that, like, I get that straight up, that question, like, hey, I'm interested in going vegan. I really like cheese. What cheese should I eat? And it's like, whoo boy.
You have to get more specific than that, I'm sure.
I mean, honestly, that's like saying, that's like turning to a total stranger and saying, hey, I want to watch a movie. What movie should I watch? It's like, wow, there are a lot of things to consider here, you know? So, I mean, I usually, you know, try to find out like what kind of cheese lover a person is, because my approach personally is not the same as even like my husband, for instance. Like, I did not grow up eating a lot of cheeses. We had Kraft singles, and we had like shredded mozzarella. I think that was pretty much the extent of my family's cheese consumption. So my personal favorites are like directly related to that. So I love Follow Your Heart American slices, which are like the closest thing to a Kraft single that you're going to get as a vegan. And, you know, and that's kind of where I'm at. I like Miyoko's like fresh mozzarella. And
that's really good. I love them.
And like, you know, a few, and I've branched out a little bit. Like, there are other things I like, but that's kind of my comfort zone, is directly related to what I kind of grew up eating. Whereas my husband loves a moldy cheese, a smelly cheese, a runny cheese, like all these, like, for me, I'm scared of Swiss cheese. That's too much for me. I don't want it. But the stinkier the better. So, you know, it's like totally, I need more information when people ask me that. And the other thing I always suggest is, you know, you're gonna have to be willing to not like a few things, because I feel like a lot of people start with whatever is kind of the most accessible. And for most people, that's gonna be a Daya product, because they're everywhere. And not all, I used to have a hard stance that all Daya was trash. They have made some changes, and I've tried some things of theirs that were fine. Still not my favorite, but like certainly not as disgusting as like I found some things early on. But, you know, I feel like a lot of people try that first and it's like wildly not what they were expecting or what they're familiar with. And so they get really disillusioned. And so I'm, you know, I'm always reminding people that you might not find your true love on the first try. Like, you might need to kiss a few frogs when it comes to vegan cheese. Everybody's gotten burned by, you know, the block of almond cheese in the grocery store or the day of.
I have a confession. I'm kind of obsessed with vintage lingerie, and I have been pretty much my whole life. Which sounds kind of weird to say, but I also grew up obsessed with Courtney Love, and her style was so informative to my own personal style since I was a child. I love slips, I love teddies, I love taking the pinup girl style and making it my own. And when I'm looking for good vintage lingerie, Bride of the Fox has my back. They are a store located in Roanoke, Virginia, but they have an online presence, so you can shop online too. And you can find them on Instagram at Bride of the Fox. They have great items all the way from 1915 to the 1990s. Right now I'm kind of obsessed with this teddy that they have. It's like kind of beige and beautiful and silk, but what I really love is that it has a 40-inch bust, and it's so hard to find lingerie that's like good for someone who's kind of top heavy like me. So if you're also into vintage lingerie, you should go right now, add Bride of the Fox on Instagram, and you can check out their Etsy store. Some of their stuff is also on Instagram. And if you do live in Virginia, go to their in-person store. They even have private appointments.
Say I like a very sharp or stinky cheese and I'm looking to substitute, what would you recommend?
Well, that's where some of the more artisan cheeses, I think, come into play. There aren't a lot of cheeses like that are widely available, especially in like a conventional store. Most of what you'll find is, you know, kind of the traditional, like a cheddar, an American, maybe like a mozzarella, a provolone. Like there aren't a lot of more like French style vegan cheeses in conventional markets, but you can find them from artisan makers. So in Chicago we have Cheese and Thank You, where, you know, she's now in Whole Foods and she's doing like six flavors that are more like, I think in my fridge right now I have a black garlic wedge that she did, and she definitely does more like blue cheeses and kind of more fermented things. So you kind of have to, those are a bit harder and you have to seek them out, and you can get them online too. Like Vegan Essentials has a lot of more kind of the more like fancy and, you know, dare I say, stinky cheeses. but you're not going to find those at, you know, even at Whole Foods. They're a little too weird for most consumers.
Fair. Where do you feel, okay, so where does the consciousness aspect of veganism intertwine with your work or in your personal life or even ritual?
I mean, luckily for me, my ethical veganism is like a huge part of my 9-to-5 job, which is marketing for a vegan company. So there is 100% overlap in my personal interests and my job, which I'm extremely fortunate to say. But, you know, in the past, in other places I've worked, it's just been a perspective that I've been able to bring to the table. When new products are being developed, I'm always sort of bringing up like, why can't we make this vegan? I worked for a snack brand a few years ago that was working on a chocolate covered product, and they wanted to put a glaze on it to make it shiny because it's more appealing that way. And the conventional, confectioner's glaze that normally would go on it is made from beetles, so it's not vegan. And, you know, I just sort of put it as like, people are going to want to know if this is vegan, especially if I personally mention it, or I personally am like behind promoting it, they're going to ask me. And if I have to tell them no, I'm going to have to explain, this glaze is made out of bugs. Like, is that something that you want me telling people? You know? And they were like, okay, let's find a vegan glaze. So there's definitely a lot of overlap there. I don't know that I think about it that often, though, outside of, like, you know, what I'm doing for work. I think that I'm walking my dogs thinking about, like, how, you know, is this vegan? How can I do this more vegan?
I'm curious, like, also, I guess, do you feel as though the work that you do has really influenced people in a lot of ways to go vegan in a lot of ways? Or like, do you feel like more of your consumers are people who have already had a vegan lifestyle? Or have you been, like, more of an introduction veganism?
Yeah, well, I mean, as far as Bacon Destroy is concerned, I really can only say, like, anecdotally that I have heard from a lot of people who went vegan because of things that they saw me posting. It's kind of to fall down a bit of a rabbit hole. A lot of those people are wrestling fans, which is another area that I have dabbled in, you know, because one of my oldest friends is a retired professional wrestler, CM Punk, and he wrote the foreword for my cookbook, and we chit-chat a lot back and forth on social media, so inevitably people that are interested in him, you know, wanted to know, who's this person that he's talking to, what's this book he wrote a foreword for. And so a lot of people who were interested in him started following me on social media, and it really seems like they're really the ones who had never considered some of the things I talk about. Yeah. And I'm not the kind of, I don't post like the graphic heartbreaking videos. I can't look at them myself. So
I can't handle it. I remember someone showed me Meet Your Meat once, and it was terrifying.
Yeah,
like, it was the worst. Like, if that doesn't make you go vegan, I don't know what's wrong with you.
I mean, there's a place for that kind of media. I mean, that honestly, watching as a teenager, stumbling upon a video of a pig slaughterhouse is what made me go vegan. So it is effective, and I'm not criticizing it as being ineffective, but for me personally, I can't look at it, so therefore I can't put it on my platform. Like, I physically can't look at it, so I'm not going to put it out for anybody else to look at either. If you want to look at that kind of thing, there are a lot of places you can look at it, but I guess my point is that, you know, these like wrestling fans that started following me because, like, I seem like a weirdo and I might be fun to follow on the internet, they're not seeing, that's not what they're seeing from me. What they're seeing from me is like, look at this pizza, look at these tacos, look at these donuts, you know, like, they're kind of seeing all the things you can have, you know, as a vegan, like, and not like, not the things you can't.
Restrictive. It's actually delicious.
Right. And so, you know, and maybe from there, like, I would get questions like, wait, I'm confused. That's a vegan marshmallow. Why aren't other marshmallows vegan? And, you know, and then that's an opportunity to say like, oh, gelatin is made out of cartilage and bones. And then they're like, gross. And maybe they try a vegan marshmallow and that's where it starts, you know? So anecdotally, I know that there are people out there who did become vegan because they stumbled upon my social media one way or another. I don't know, you know, what kind of a broader impact I might personally have, except to say that if I happen to be one of the first people you meet on your journey, like I like to think that I'm going to be there to help you and answer your questions and inspire you and, you know, make you feel less intimidated. And definitely not going to judge anybody for their, you know, their stumbles or their, or what it takes to learn along the way, because nobody's perfect and being perfect is not the goal. The goal is, you know, is being the best you can be and being the kindest that you can be. So I hope that, you know, my impact has just been helping people along. Like maybe I'm one of those little rolly things that they show on the Amazon commercials and boxes are rolling across me. Like maybe people that are on their way to become vegan roll across me on their way there. And I'm happy with that.
Your bridge.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is like one recipe or tip that you could give people to, if they're first starting out and they want to try a vegan diet, what is the first thing that like actually excites you that seems kind of complicated but isn't, is actually pretty easy?
Well, I mean, going back to the cheese conversation, I think probably one of the most like you know, one of the most crucial experiences of my life was trying a nutritional yeast based cheese sauce as like a 20-year-old. And, you know, a friend, like having people over and somebody coming with like a big pot of mac and cheese and just being like amazed that you could have that. And so, you know, it sounds like, it kind of confuses people to say vegan nacho cheese if they're totally new to this world, but it's a very simple recipe. You don't need anything fancy to make it. I've made it in a bowl with a whisk. I've made it in a Vitamix. Like there are enough variations that you know, you don't necessarily, like if you don't have a Vitamix and you don't have a food processor, you can use tahini instead of nuts or instead of sesame seeds. So you don't need to blend anything. Like there are a million ways that you can make like the world's most basic vegan nacho cheese recipe, but I have never, ever given it to anyone who didn't love it. And I've never had anyone come back to me and say that the recipe wasn't for them. And people feel very free to do that when they don't like your recipe. So I feel pretty confident that that one's a winner. And I think it's like a good gateway for people because it's fun and it's easy. And it's like, you know, maybe nachos aren't like an everyday food anyway. So it's kind of fun to make them. So usually my nacho cheese recipe is the first one that I'll give someone to try. And you know, and then from there, it's like the sky's the limit because you can put, you can put it on pizza, you can put it on pasta, you can, you know, you can do a million things with it. So
can you describe how to do it for our listeners?
Yeah, it's really easy. So like I said, if you have a blender or if you have a food processor, you just, it's a really small amount of, you can use cashews, so like a quarter cup of cashews, or if you have a nut allergy or you don't want to buy cashews because they're expensive, you can do the same thing with raw sesame seeds or the same amount of tahini. So if you don't want to do any soaking or blending or anything, a quarter cup of tahini. And it's just that with like a cup and a half of water, a cup of nutritional yeast, some onion powder, some garlic powder. For nacho cheese, I throw a chipotle pepper and adobo in there. You could use hot sauce. You could use whatever you want. A tablespoon of lemon juice, or if you don't have any lemons around, you could use, I use apple cider vinegar or white vinegar sometimes. So you just need something to add a little bit of tanginess in there. And some salt. I don't think I'm forgetting anything. And you just you just blend it all together, or if you're not doing the blender, like I said, you can whisk it all together. You cook it on the stovetop for a few minutes until it thickens up, and that's it. It's really easy. I have a bunch of variations of it on my site. There's ones that like only use vegetables and seasonings. There's ones that use nuts. There's ones that use sesame seeds, but it's super easy and it's muscle memory for me at this point. So when I make it, I don't even look at what I'm doing. I'm just putting things in the blender. But that's my go-to. That's the dirtiest page on my cookbook for sure.
Amazing. So what are your favorite vegan products right now?
Let's see. What have I been loving? I really like the Kite Hill ravioli, which are not new, but I've been eating them a lot more lately. I love, obviously, you know, Upton's Naturals is the company I work for, just full disclosure, but we just came out with vegan hot dogs called Up Dogs, and I was very involved with that project, and I think they're really awesome. I have 3 packs of them in my fridge right now, so they're really, really good. I love hot dogs, especially Chicago-style hot dogs, and I have been eating like the same really pale, soft, squishy soy hot dog for the past 20 something years. And, you know, we decided that it was time to pay homage to the Chicago, like Vienna beef hot dog, because I think a lot of people have accepted that like really soft, mushy vegan hot dog for so long because everybody grew up eating Oscar Mayer wieners and those are really soft and squishy. But like in Chicago, if you grew up eating a Vienna beef hot dog that had that snap when you bite into it and like a really like savory flavor inside, that squishy soft hot dog is never going to do the trick for you. So we really wanted to recreate that. So not to give Upton's a little commercial, but that really genuinely is one of my favorite things right now.
I love their seitan. It's really good. And then their chorizo is also really good.
Well, thank you. Yeah, obviously, you know, that's always in my fridge because I work there and my husband works there. So we're an Upton's family. But outside of that, I feel like the older I get, the more I gravitate toward, like, I'm really excited about the new things. Like I'm, you know, when there's a new ice cream, I'm going to try it. When there's whatever, I'm interested in everything new and all the innovations. I think it's really amazing what people are doing in vegan food right now. But I do find myself like kind of having like nostalgia for the old brands like Tofurky and Follow Your Heart and kind of like the brands that were there for me at the very beginning. And not only do I have a lot of respect for them for pioneering, but also like they're just really good. Like Tofurky products are good. And like Follow Your Heart products are really good. Like I love their cheeses. I love their mayo. So I don't know. I find myself like always buying those brands that have been around forever. And I'm sure part of it is just because that's the kind of vegan food that I learned to eat early on. But part of it definitely is like also just working in the industry and seeing like who, you know, who's who and like what is the motivating force behind a brand. And so like meeting Seth from Tofurky and like meeting Bob from Follow Your Heart, like knowing that they're the real deal and they're like ethical vegans and like the way they run their company is, you know, always kind of like vegan forward compared to, you know, no shade on like Beyond Meat. I know people love it and I'm thrilled with what they're doing to disrupt the, you know, animal agriculture, but like they're less endearing to me because I don't know the people behind them personally and I don't know their story and they aren't really concerned with telling that story. Like that's not their market, which is fine. But so I don't know. I personally gravitate towards the brands that are kind of more like vegan centric and aren't afraid to, you know, say what they're about. which I was really excited because Dandy's recently changed their packaging. It used to say all natural marshmallows, and now it says vegan marshmallows on the package. And I was just like thrilled that it's like right out there, vegan marshmallow, deal with it.
Okay, so what do you think are the staples for Chicago vegan food other than Optic? I love Thai pine garlic. What are some of your personal favorite, like local favorites that you would want to shout out or share for anyone locally?
Yeah, I just, I've been thinking about this a lot because I just put together a Taste of Vegan Chicago prize package as part of Upton's 14th anniversary. We were doing giveaways all week, so I had a lot of fun like falling down a rabbit hole of brands that are local that are either completely vegan or have a lot of vegan friendly products, because there are a lot that I don't know if people are really aware of, like where they're from. Like Enjoy Life Foods, which is the big like allergen friendly brand, they make everything, chocolate chips, cookies, like all kinds of stuff. They're based here. Who else is based here? Simple Mills. They make like a ton of gluten-free like cookies and crackers and breakfast cereals and things like that. They're based in Chicago. So I had fun just like researching who's from around here. Like obviously Chicago Vegan Foods, they're the makers of Dandy's. They also make Temptation ice cream, which is the soft serve that we have at Upton's Break Room in Westtown. But like there are so many like big and small brands that are based here. I think some of my local favorites though, obviously Pie Pie My Darling, like everybody loves. Heather is really sweet and everything she makes is beautiful and delicious. I'm a big fan of another bakery called Mindful Baking. They're based in Ravenswood. They're gluten-free and vegan, which initially scared me because I am not gluten-free and I've had a lot of bad gluten-free food, but I would put her brownies up against any brownie out there, vegan, gluten-free or not. They're really delicious and she makes a lot of really great things. Cheese and Thank You, who I already mentioned, also based in Chicago, and her cheeses are really incredible. There's a lot. There's Cookie Cuts Kitchen, which isn't totally vegan, but she makes a lot of vegan things, and she does really intricate decorated cookies that actually taste good. A lot of times those are gross.
Yeah.
But hers are not gross.
I had a face cake for my my 10th birthday. I had a face cake and I was so excited about it, and then I tasted it and I was like, this is disgusting.
Yeah I mean, but no, her decorated cookies are actually really, really good. I find a lot of these places at the Chicago Vegan Test Kitchen Market, which sadly, you know, right now hasn't been happening because of COVID concerns, but they're actually starting to put on like a vegan farmers market at the plant. So that's happening, I think August 1st is the first one. So it's coming up. But yeah, I find a lot of really great like Chicago based vegan brands just going to that market.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Natalie. If someone wants to follow you, they can go to Bake and Destroy on Instagram. Can you shout out any other ways that people can support your work?
Yeah, I mean, Instagram's really the best. It's probably the place where I'm the most active. I'm on Twitter also, but mostly just to complain about the mayor. So fair. Up to you if you want to go see what my complaining on Twitter, but yeah, Instagram is probably the best place to follow me.
Awesome, thank you so much for sharing with us today. I hope you come back when you have something to promote or a new project and we can talk all about vegan food.
I would love that. Thank you for having me.
All right, have a great day.
You too. Bye. Thank you.
each week we are asking the BB Hive to send us your most humorous dating stories. Would you like to be featured on Bad Romance? Send us your story as a voice note. Please make sure you include your name, their star sign, and keep it under 3 minutes. Our email is burnblackzine@gmail.com. And be sure to include the title Bad Romance in the subject line.
Okay, so I wanted to tell you about the time I decided to use manifesting for dating. And I decided to try Hinge, and I said that I wanted to date an artist, and I said I wanted to date somebody who was into like tarot and astrology. And I surely got exactly what I was asking for, but be careful what you wish for. So I matched with this guy who asked me about tarot, and he said that he had a tarot deck and he was trying to like teach himself. So I was like, oh, that's cute. At least like you're not commenting on something physical. You actually have something in common with me, or at least are feigning interest. So we started talking, and he told me that he wrote poetry and that he actually carved mandalas out of like wood blocks. And I was like, that's pretty cool. And he said that he used them to make crystal grids. And I was like, that's very interesting. I would definitely be interested to meet this young man. So he then mentioned that he wanted to have an art date with me. And I thought that was really cool and cute. And he was like, yeah, we'll have an art date and I'll meet you, blah, blah, blah. So I meet up with him and I picked a place, and I should have known as a sign from the universe that it was going to be a shit show, because I got to the place that I had picked and it was closed for like a plumbing issue. And I was like, oh no, I should just go home. But I didn't. I saw him walking down the street towards me, and he was carrying a giant bag, like a tote bag. He kind of looks like a teacher, which is fine. But like a nerdy teacher, like tropey 80s, whatever. So we meet up and we pick a different place. We go, and he pulls out this bag after we order our drinks, and he has brought with him his giant wooden mandalas to like show me, which kind of freaked me out. And then he pulled out like a shoebox filled with note cards that he had written poems on. So when he said that he wanted to have an art date, I thought that that was like we were going to have some drinks and like write some bad poetry and draw pictures together and like read tarot cards. But that is not what his concept of an art date was. He thought, let me just bring all of this shit that I've told her about to the date and have like one giant show and tell. I mean, the table that he picked for us to sit at was like in the back of this bar, and it was like one of those long communal tables, and there was nobody there but us. So he spread all of this shit out and pulled out all of these like poems, and they were like illegibly written, and he was like, oh, we can't even read them. So I never actually heard any of his poetry. I just saw it. It was the weirdest thing. No art was made on this date. Just mistakes and miscommunication. And he was a Gemini. I did not make it as far to get his moon and rising. I was just trying to get out of there safely. But yeah, if you see a guy coming towards you with a bag full of shit, just run the other direction.
And now, Burn Black presents the Burn Black Book Club. Say that 5 times fast.
Okay, so this week, guys, I am not only reviewing, I am highly recommending the book Astrology for the Soul by Jan Spiller. This is an astrology classic, and it should be in your collection immediately. First of all, it looks primarily at the nodes of the moon, both the north and the south nodes. It shows us our karmic path and really our soul purpose in this lifetime. And this book has really informed the work that I do as a healing-focused astrologer. It has these very easy-to-read bullet points for each one of the nodes of instructions that you must learn in this lifetime. But then it goes even deeper into each one of the nodes of the moon. It gives examples of how it might come up in your own life. And it also gives you kind of a way to use it into your benefit once it's balanced out a little bit. And I think that's really important because we focus a lot of times on the nodes, the south node being something that we should leave behind. Whereas I really do feel like we have all of these beautiful karmic gifts that we're given. They just need to be balanced out and integrated into the personality just a little bit easier in this lifetime. And that's part of our karma. So I highly recommend this book. I mean, even Britney Spears was reading it on Instagram, guys. So if you back Britney Spears, you'll get this book. And now for the self-care tip of the week. Following me for any amount of time, you know that I am extremely obsessed with Yoko Ono. I have been since I was a kid. And she wrote this book in the 1960s called Grapefruit, which is kind of legendary and changed the way that I looked at life because, duh, she's an Aquarius. And it has such clever, almost pieces of poems, but they're really actually instructions for how to live your life. And I thought I would read some of them as self-care tips this week. This one's called Travel Peace. Make a key, find a lock that fits. If you find it, burn the house down that's attached to it. So funny. Another one that I really love is City Peace. Walk all over the city with an empty baby carriage. And some of them are just very silly like that. And then some of them are much more meaningful to me, like painting to exist only when it's photographed. Let people copy or photograph your paintings. Destroy the originals. As a zinester, I absolutely fell in love with that one. Here's another one. It's called Mirror Peace. Instead of obtaining a mirror, obtain a person. Look into him. Use different people, young, old, fat, small, etc. I love Yoko Ono so much. She's so funny. I'll share one more with you that I really love. Snow Peace. Think that snow is falling. Think that snow is falling everywhere all the time. When you talk with a person, think that snow is falling between you and that person. Stop conversing whenever you think the person is covered by snow. I'm so Neptunian. And that's our episode for this week. Stay tuned next week where we interview Madison Young on her new show, which is called Submission Possible. And it's all about queer kink and travel. I'm really excited. This is a really juicy interview. Also, I just want to thank everybody who made this episode possible. Jeanette, Natalie, Danny Bickford as well, and Talene Kali, who sent us our beautiful music, who we will be playing in just a second. Thank you guys so much. Remember to join my Patreon at patreon.com/burnblack. And everyone have a great week. Peace, love, and empathy. Don't throw love away.
burn black.